Welcome to Studio Secrets A to Z, and we're here with episode 8 on the Midazolan series. We're getting winding down. I think we have 3 tracks left, and today we're going to be focusing on Be My Icon, and that's going to be a fun one. There's quite a good backstory to that. We have Bob St. John here again to explore the memories, and here we go.
I'm ready.
Sure, we're going to play the track. Let's play the track first for a change instead of, you know, boring people for 10 minutes and then playing the track.
I hope it jogs my memory. mostly forgotten about that song.
Wow.
It's a psychedelic stalker anthem.
Yeah, I haven't heard this in a long, long time, and it really jarred my memory. Like, so many things came back to me. Well, first of all, the song was originally called Butt Naked. And the reason I know that
was it really?
Yeah, the reason I know that is because all my Akai discs, and that's going to be the bonus thing on this podcast. I'm going to play a bunch of the drum samples separately for anybody who wants them, and we'll talk about all that in a bit. But anyway, all the Akai discs are labeled Butt Naked 1, Butt Naked 2. Butt Naked 3.
That's vaguely jogging my memory.
So what happened?
Something really peculiar about the title.
Yeah, what happened? It was originally sung by John. It wasn't a Simon song. Okay.
Right.
And then they never completed it. And then there was just like talk about the lyrics not being quite right. I mean, Butt Naked might not be the most accessible title. I don't know. I don't really know anything about that. But anyhow, it ended up becoming a Simon song with Be My Icon. It was completely rewritten. And at that point, we were brought in to, you know, I think, yeah, that's when we came in. But I do remember hearing the other version. I wish I don't have it, though.
Yeah, I vaguely remember John's voice on it. Until you said Butt Naked, it didn't come back to me.
I forgot until I saw the Akai discs, you know.
I was trying to figure out, what did this song sound like originally? What was the arrangement?
Oh, it wasn't industrial like this. I was kind of going through that Trent Reznor stage. you know, I mean, that's what I was listening to so much of back then. And like those kick samples, that boom, it's like all distorted and everything. Running you know, drum samples through distortion boxes, although I think use the SSL as a distortion box.
The SSL is still one of my favorite distortion pedals. I remember when we were working on the mixes one night. It was, you know, it was distorting. It wasn't distorting when it should have been distorting. It was distorting on its own. It was like 2 a.m. and we went and woke up the tech.
Okay.
And, you know, he came in and, you know, because we used, the inputs, trims to get extra gain and distortion with the filters and everything else, when you'd hit play on the multitrack, you'd see like about 20 overload lights illuminate on the console. So the guy comes in and he says, "What's the matter?" And I'm like, you know, indignant and so American, like, "It's distorting." He's like, "Well, all right." He reaches over and he pushes play, and you see all the overload lights light up like a Christmas tree. And he looked at me and said, "What exactly isn't distorting?" I says, "It's not a distortion I want." This was one of those songs.
That's hilarious. What a great story. So we have to start, we're not doing our where, why, and how and stuff. So we have to remember, we have to tell people this was Metropolis, right? In London.
Exactly.
Studio B, downstairs. And
downstairs.
So, yeah, and I don't remember how we started manufacturing this other sort of direction. I remember collecting samples for it back home, though. And we must have known about the song for a while, because I hear like my, you know, Korg Mini Pops, my TR-626, all these analog beatboxes that I used to collect.
What played that little like video game sound?
You know what I'm talking about? That was my phone. I was trying to remember the brand of the phone. It was like some kind of warning that, you know, like a message warning.
It's such a familiar sound, but it's so old.
It's a flip phone. It's so 90s. It's a flip phone. It only happens once, right?
Right.
Yeah,
it just happens once.
I remember in the
intro.
It went off when we were working on the song. I'm like, "Oh, wait, that's cool. That's in the right key." And then we recorded it. So all those beatboxes, I had like, you know, on Akai discs. And that's why I still have them. And that's why I'm going to share them later in this episode. And I'll give some of those away. Those are cool. And some of them are processed and some of them are raw. But then that's how we started, was I remember just assembling all these beatbox grooves and everything. And that's kind of the foundation, was kind of just coming up with that noise groove. And there is some samples of Steve Alexander in the chorus, those big room sounds. That came from Steve.
I think this was the song that Steve appeared on, if I remember right.
Yeah, he did some of those fills, like those big, really big. So, yeah, I think I have a couple of those samples on that Akai disc as well. We'll just run through them later.
Do you remember, I'm having a vague remembrance of Simon, of us recording those background vocals with Simon.
I remember that. Yeah.
because I don't think that the song existed in any form,
right,
other than, you know, in your sampler. I was thinking, that's why my initial question was, what would this sound like? Because it sounds like you also laid in the guitars from somewhere else.
Those were, Warren had all those Jam Man guitars. I think we sampled them off DAT, but some of them might have been played live to the original band track. They're really cool. They sound like a Hoover vacuum cleaner at times. They're really, really wild.
Right.
Genius guitar stuff.
It was really psychedelic.
Yeah, it's so cool.
In an industrial sort of way.
Lots of great vocal treatments, too. You can go into that.
You know what that was? That I was listening to it, and I'm listening, and there was that point in time through, like, I'd say from about 96-ish through 2000, and then I lost the unit. It was the Lexicon Vortex.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I was in love with that thing. And that's the only thing that made that sound. I could hear it even through the little speaker here. It's that swirling sort of a Leslie kind of a chord. It was very unique. I'm surprised we don't see that as a plug-in.
I still have two of them. I have two of the units.
Do you?
Yeah.
Mine disappeared. I remember it fell at the Metropolis in Boston, and the knob's broken off. Well, if the knob's broken off, it's mine.
One of them is broken, and one of them works. So I guess the broken one's yours.
Wow, thank you, man. It's vintage.
I can remember.
I'm going to sell it on eBay.
This is another topic, is Bob breaking things. I mean, we can go into that. I remember there was like one piece of gear that wasn't working right at Cortland at one time, and you ended up putting it like sideways on a step and jumping up and down on it. What was
that? That's dismissed as coincidence. I never did such a thing. I'm not responsible for that fine work of art.
No, yeah.
We actually nailed it to the tree outside. That's what we did.
What was it?
It was a guitar pedal crucifixion.
Wow. Do you remember the time that we taped up a guitar cable to the guitar and then threw the guitar down the stairs really hard and recorded it?
Yeah, those were the tats. We dragged it down the stairs. We dropped it. We dragged it. Yeah.
That was a guitar snuff film. Anyway, we'll get back on topic here. What were we talking about?
Trying to remember when Simon came in and cut the background vocals,
okay,
and it's slowly coming back to me.
There we go.
Because, you know, with Simon, you've got to pull him over here to where carbon-based life forms go.
Yeah.
And he's out there singing like some really strange atonal stuff. And you and I are just looking at each other,
it's
like,
brilliant,
what are we
going
to do with this? And yeah, we know what we're going to do with it. And I'm like, yeah, Simon, that sounds really red. And he's like, it's supposed to be, it's like Schoenberg. And I'm just staring at him. And we let him do it. And then you and I tuned it. We did tune it to very 12-tone-esque sounding part. You listen to it, it's really different.
It's cool, yeah. He's brilliant with those harmonies, man. He always comes up with the coolest stuff.
And you know, I'm the more I think about it, the more I can see him through the glass at Metropolis. It was just like one of those late night things. He came in for like an hour and recorded.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was a pretty long process just putting it all together, because it was put together like with little pieces. I don't remember anything about the bass. Do you remember anything about the bass? Is that Warren?
Yeah, that was Warren, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I just, when I was listening to it, I was remembering that, you know, when we were piecing it together and how excited we were when it just kicks in, because that song, yeah. I mean, you and I know the song, but if you have no idea what's coming, you don't know what's coming. Yeah. And it just slams into that chorus groove.
Yeah, it's so cool. The chorus explodes. And then at the end, there's some really dark guitar harmonies. It's like, there's some kind of like,
yes,
almost like two different keys converging at one point. It's really, really,
right,
really very Zappa.
Did you do those drums at your studio? Was that in a sampler? Or
Well,
that sounds like your studio.
Yeah, some of those big sounds, it's a combination of Steve Alexander's ambient tracks, like which I mm-hmm. think were mm-hmm. chopped up.
No, his fills were definitely there. I remember that.
Yeah, and then there was some other sounds that I was blending with the beatboxes, which were definitely from my studio, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, you can recognize the room. It's just got that thing. It's a brick and beam thing. But
Right, exactly.
It's such a cool chorus. I mean, I do like the song a lot more than I remembered. At the time, it wasn't like one of my favorite ones, but now, you know, listening to it all these years later, I like it more than I remember. It's really cool.
Well, the lines, the song, you know, whenever you'd mention the song to me, the only thing I could remember was, I went through your trash, I love you so much, I keep your cigarette butts. I think I used that as a pickup line once.
Really? Well, you know, the whole story is creepy, you know, about the whole stalker thing. And, you know, I can see, from my limited time with hanging with those guys in London, I remember two stories, which I may have already told in one of these podcasts, but for people who haven't seen some of the or listened to some of the others, I remember whenever I went, like when I went to Privacy, when we worked on Silo Halo and stuff, there was all these people just hanging out outside by, you know, it's just hanging out. And they weren't like, it was like all different ages. It was like, and I got out of the car and they're like, "Hey, Anthony." And I'm like, how do these people know who I am? So there's a creepy thing that's kind of this song talks about. And I remember going to watch football at Simon's house one Sunday. It was like a soccer game that we hung out, and I went, and there were people hanging out down by his, at the end of his driveway. When we got there. So it's like, I think this might be
strange.
Somewhat of a, you know, based on some real life experiences. Because if you have people going through your trash, I mean, you're going to get kind of paranoid, you know? And that's what's in the song.
People go through my trash, they're going to find cat litter.
But yeah, so it's a dark, it's a very dark, dark, creepy song, Be My Icon. It's really, I was there a video for this? I never saw a video for this. It would have been a cool video.
What did Nick contribute in this track? I'm trying to remember. There's a couple of atmospheric sorts of sounds.
Oh, Nick's got some great stuff on there. I remember, I can hear his Wasp synth doing that little Nick and Tinley got some really great stuff. We got to get Tinley on to talk about some of this stuff. We're working on trying to find him. But yeah, Nick did some brilliant things on this. Nick and Tinley. Yeah, there's some high weird kind of, yeah, there's a bunch of atmospheres and stuff that's all blended together. But I remember the Wasp, that sound. There's nothing quite like that. I'm surprised there's not Omnichord or something on it. I used to see that all over the track sheets, Omnichord. That's when I got addicted to them. I'm like, one day I said to Nick, what's an Omnichord? And then he explained it to me, and he actually brought one in, I think. And that I was hooked from then on.
That's a cool box.
Well, they used to be cool. They used to be like $75 on eBay, and now they're like $800. It's so bizarre. You know, at one point.
What was the other thing you played that had the zipper on it? What was that?
Stylophone.
The stylophone, right. That was very cool too.
Yeah, I love
stylophone. Those. Any stylophone on Midazzle End?
I don't remember.
I don't think it made an appearance.
Yeah, I think that's more TV Mania.
It's a very specific sort of sound. Yes, exactly. You know, exactly.
The TV Mania album would be a fun thing to go through at some point, because it's a little bit more.
Well, I was explaining in that interview yesterday that, you know, TV Mania was that interstitial record between Thank You and Midazzle End.
Yeah, it kind of,
and I hear.
Yes.
I hear a lot of TV Mania in Midazzle End.
Absolutely. You know, yeah.
Which I think that was unique to what we did at the time, for certain. You know.
Sure, and that performance art aspect, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
So I'm trying to think of anything else we can talk about with the mix. It's you know, it's got great low end. I'm trying, like, those distorted drum samples and all that stuff.
And the more I think about it, that is Warren on the bass. I remember that pretty clearly now. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's cool. That's B.
Remember, he used to use that whammy pedal. I don't think he used the whammy pedal on that track.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
It made an appearance on on Midazzle End, didn't it?
Yes. Wasn't it Midnight Sun or something at the outro?
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah. That's exactly it. It was on Midnight Sun. Yeah, because, I mean, the first time I heard it on the bass was on People Know Your Name from the TV Mania record.
That's
remember
right.
that?
Yep, People Know Your Name.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and it's definitely Midnight Sun. Yeah, it's a very cool sound. I can remember watching him play it. It's just...
He's got the most amazing rig. I mean, I remember at this era, after the album was done, seeing them at the Roseland Ballroom, and you know, Tinley was just a genius with MIDI and all that stuff. He had all these huge racks of like H4000s and all this crazy
imagine
gear.
Making all of that stuff and work environment where it has to work,
and push one button and then it all changes for the next song. I mean, just amazing. Like, Warren's guitar rig was one of the craziest. I'm sure there might be a rig round up somewhere of it, because it was just, I've never seen anything like it. It was insane.
Yeah,
that would be.
He uses gear like it's an instrument.
Yeah, he really does. Like, I remember him doing something, like unplugging his guitar, and he calls it the wire, and he would just like tap with his thumb on the jack, and he would make it into all kinds of music.
Make a rhythm.
But changing the notes with harmonizers. I mean, I'm going to play the wire. And it was like always incredible. I mean, the guy's just a freaking musical genius. He really is.
I don't think he's from this planet. No, I'm pretty sure he isn't.
Yeah, he's great. You know, I just talked to him the other day about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing. And and it was fun to reconnect with him, and we're going to get together. He's been working on a lot of 12-tone music, which I took some lessons from him at one point on that stuff, and maybe we'll get back into collaborating. But
cool.
That's a good amount of stuff on Be My Icon. I'm trying to think if there's any stones unturned.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. I think we actually, I was surprised at how much I remembered, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a cool track, and I think what we'll do is conclude the episode with Maya Kai sampler playing in some of these drum sounds, so for people to check out. Okay, so I'm going to play these Akai samples. They're on floppy disks, and we're just going to, I'll play two or three hits of each one, and you guys can mess around with them. And they were stuff that, as far as intellectual property rights and all that, it was stuff I used from my old beatboxes. I used to have a great beatbox collection. I don't have most of them anymore, but anyway, enjoy. Here they are. Be your own icon. Well, it's been great, Bob.
I love you so much. I saved your Akai discs.
Yeah. So, we've got now, after this one we've got left, two more. We've got Silva Halo, which I don't think is going to be a very long. I think we can do the next two together on the. So we have Mike.
Because Silva Halo was after I went came home. I think.
Yeah,
we
I did
stayed
that,
in London.
I did that on a Sunday. Yeah, I did that on a day off. So yeah, that and Michael, I think, are going to be the last episode to conclude the Midazolan series. It's been really fun. Thank you so much for coming on every.
Absolutely.
Every week. And I'll get you those links, and we'll start sharing more. Thanks to everybody who's been sending, direct messages and all that stuff. We answer every single one of them, and. Love hearing from people. I'll have to send you some. I've done some clips of them.
I'd love to see them.
Yeah, yep. I'll forward a bunch to you. All right, wonderful, guys. Thanks for coming. And Studio Secrets A to Z is signing off today.